Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So Susan, we're excited to hear what you have to say.
Hi everybody, I'm an alcoholic. My name's Susan Tornig.
Hi Susan.
And you're excited to hear what I'm going to say? I'm excited to hear what I'm going to say. It's a three-part step. Having had a spiritual awakening, practice these principles in all our affairs, and carrying the message. It's a three-part step. It talks in the big book about the spiritual awakening. Some people get that bright flash of light, and it comes suddenly. Some people get the educational variety. I'm going to tell you, most of my spiritual awakenings have been the educational variety. I get somewhere down the road and I turn around and look and went, oh, that happened. Very rarely have I had the bright light. Have I had that immediate result of knowing that I've had a spiritual awakening. I have had them. But most of the time those come when I say, God, I need an answer and I need it now and I need you to make it clear so that I don't miss it. And he has answered when I've had those. Coming back from Georgia, I'm driving and I'm not sure I'm making the right decision coming back from Georgia. I had planned to move to Georgia. I had all the plans made. I had moved to Georgia. I'd gotten down there. I found an apartment, found a job. I received a call from my son's PO. If you don't come back and take charge of him until he's 18, he's going to jail for the term of his problems. Now, he hadn't lived with me in over a year. But he, at that time, he wasn't drinking, he wasn't drugging, he was doing the right thing, he was working, he was doing everything, but they were going to throw him in jail. I prayed about it and decided I was coming back. I called my old boss here, she gave me my job, I talked to a friend, I had a place to live, everything fell into place, I decided to come back. I'm coming up from Cleveland, coming around Cleveland that last bend to get on 90, and I'm God, give me an answer, give me that answer now. I need it so I'm not going to miss it, and a rainbow appears, and I followed that rainbow to Erie. That was my answer. I had a spiritual awakening at that point in time. After my mother died, and I was trying to make decisions about what I was going to do with her things and to settle her affairs. And it was that same thing. I had two choices I could make. And I'm like, God, you know, I don't know which way to go on this, and if it's this way, I think I'm doing the right thing, so, you know, give me a sign. If this is the way it's supposed to be, give me a sign and make it so I can't miss it. Well, my mother had butterflies everywhere in her apartment. She had them on the wallpaper in the bathroom. She had them everywhere. It was a cold day in May. Cold. And butterflies appeared. I made that decision. It was the right decision. To me, that's a spiritual awakening. But most of my spiritual experiences have been of the educational variety. Like I said, I get somewhere down the road and I turn around and look and I go, oh, God, that's what God was showing me. And I've had girls that I sponsor that I've seen them have a spiritual awakening and the tears are running down their face. And they go, what just happened to me? And I'm like, welcome to a spiritual experience. They don't even realize what it is, and I can tell them. And that, let me tell you something, that's a spiritual experience unto itself, to watch someone else have one. It's awesome. It's wonderful. I can't even begin to describe how good it feels for me to be able to have someone watch them have it. But you know, you work these steps and you get them. You work these steps with the whole heart and you get those spiritual experiences. God lets you know that he's here and he's with you and he's walking this. And you'll continue to get them as long as you keep working these steps. They're still happening for me. It's been 43 years and they're still happening for me on a regular basis. I can't express that enough. Like we said, I had program A and program B. And in program A, I worked the steps. I had spiritual experiences. I stopped working the steps and I stopped going to meetings and I didn't have any. And then I came back to the fellowship and I started working the steps and I started having them again. It's amazing. I work these steps, and I work this program, and I call my sponsor, and I go to meetings, and I do what's expected of me, and I read my readings, and I work this program like it's suggested in the book, and I have spiritual experiences. Pretty much on a regular basis, I have spiritual experiences. They're not all big and huge. It's seeing my granddaughter smile at me. Okay? That's awesome. That's a spiritual experience. So, but yeah, it's working these steps. We work these steps, we get those spiritual experiences. And we keep working the steps, we continue to get them. Second part of it is, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics. Now, I got told by my sponsor, she used to say to me, she never said no. Somebody would say, can you come lead? Can you chair a meeting? Can you secretary today? Can you be treasurer of this meeting? Can you help set up for this meeting? Can you do this? My sponsor never said no, unless she had a prior commitment. She taught me by example. And you will find I never say no if I don't have a prior commitment. And I feel bad looking at someone and saying, gee, I'm sorry, I can't help you because I have a prior commitment. I would be happy to do it another time, but I can't do it that day. But I can never repay Alcoholics Anonymous for the life that's been given me. It doesn't matter how many times I do a job for Alcoholics Anonymous. It doesn't matter how late my phone rings and I have to answer it in the middle of the night to talk to somebody. I'm on the answering service. I'm secretary treasurer of a meeting. I'm sponsoring women. I'm going to Gage House, to House of Healing, to Community House, to this next week I'll be going to Gaudenzia Crossroads. They've been trying to get me to go in there for I don't know how many Thursdays now. And the girl that's been coordinating it has been checking out the leads on the website. She called me and she said, I see that step 11 is up. That means you'll be doing step 12 this week, so does that mean next Thursday we can have you? I said, yes, I will be there next week. but every week I've had to say, gee, I'm sorry, Lou, I can't help you because I'm still doing legacy. And she's going, when will you be done? But I had another prior commitment, so now next week I don't. I don't have a reason why I can't be there next week. So I will be there. It's what I was taught to do by my first sponsor. Somebody steps up. My phone rang this morning. One of the girls I sponsor says, I'm going to go to the noon meeting. Would you like to go with me? Now, a few years ago, I would have said, geez, I'd really rather stay home today because I have a couple appointments this morning and I have a couple this afternoon. Really rather just stay home at that time. But I've learned to say, sure, I'd love to go to a meeting. I'll pick you up at about 11:15. That makes it 4 meetings I've gone to this week. Because somebody, one of the ladies I sponsored, has called and asked me if I would go to a meeting with them. I've learned not to say no. They've been really good meetings. As it was the meeting that I went to today, I ran into somebody that I've been trying to find for about 4 months now. She was at that meeting today, and I got to see her. So God set that one up for me today. So I've learned not to say no to an AA meeting of any kind. But I can never repay AA. So no matter what's asked of me, you know, I have limitations, but I can go to a meeting. I can sponsor someone. I can answer my phone. There's a lot of things I can do. I don't concentrate on what I can't do. There are so many things, there are so many opportunities in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I wrote down some of them. Be a greeter at the door, answering the phone, sharing your message, secretary treasurer meeting, chair a meeting, greet a newcomer, shake hands, take a meeting into the prison, a rehab or a detox, and sponsor someone. Those are just some of the things that I could do. And there's many, many more. Get onto a committee. Go to a central committee meeting. Become a member at the club. And go down there and sit and talk. I had somebody complain to me the other week, it's not like the old days at the club where the old timers used to sit in the Serenity Room and talk to the newcomers coming in. And I let them complain and whine, and I'm like, how many years sobriety do you have? And the guy goes, well, I got 33 years of sobriety. I said, so you're the old timer now, right? He goes, well, yeah. I said, so why aren't you sitting in the Serenity Room sharing your war stories with the newcomers? He had nothing to say. Kevin. But, you know, these guys aren't looking at... There used to be old-timers sitting back in the Serenity Room sharing. The reason why there's no old-timers sitting in the Serenity Room sharing is because the old-timers of today aren't doing it. Somebody needs to do it. When I go down to the club, I stand there and I talk to some of the new guys. I talk to the new girls. Somebody's got to be willing to just put their time in there, down there. Sit back in the Serenity Room and talk to the new people. The old-timers used to do it for us. We need to do it for them. Practicing these principles in all our affairs. Very few people know what the principles of the 12 steps are. Because I've asked that question of old-timers. Well, the principles. Well, what are the principles? And people don't know. And I've challenged quite a few people to come up with them. And you can go online and there's many, many different places where you can get different ones. But if you tell me you're practicing the principles, you need to know what those principles are. You're practicing it. It doesn't matter which set of principles, but you should know what you're practicing. I found one that I like, and this is what I follow. These are the principles of the 12 steps that I follow. You can go online and you can find a different set that is more to your liking. But the principles that I follow, one is honesty, two is hope, three is surrender, four, courage, five is integrity, six is willingness, seven is humility, eight is love, nine, responsibility, 10 is discipline, 11 is awareness, and 12 is service. Now, you can go onto a website and you can find 12 principles that have nothing to do with those 12. I looked at many different ones, and I'm going to say I probably found 8 different sites that had 8 different sets of principles related to the 12 steps. Some of them I didn't think applied at all, but that was just me. But if you're going to practice the principles, you should have your own. You should have your set of principles. You should know what you're practicing. When I'm talking to the ladies that I sponsor, and I'm teaching them the principles of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I need to know what principle I'm teaching them. And when I'm teaching them step one, I'm teaching them honesty. And what I mean by that is, when I talk to them and I tell them I will sponsor them, I tell them, don't ever lie to me. That's my number one rule. And the first person they're going to lie to ever is themselves. And I tell them that too. Because they're going to believe they're telling me the truth. And when they tell me that they're an alcoholic and their life is unmanageable, they need to know that that's their truth. And it is 100% their truth. Now, they could stand there and lie to me and say, oh yes, I believe that's the truth. If they don't believe it themselves, there's nothing I can do for them. They have to believe it for themselves. They have to be honest with themselves. That's where the step comes in. That's where that principle comes in. They have to be honest on that step. And I teach them the principle of each step. And they don't even know that's what I'm teaching them. But I get them down to step 12 and I hand them the list of principles. And I say, what's that? I said, that's the list of principles that I've been teaching you all along. So now you need to go out and practice those principles, like step 12 suggests. We walk these 12 steps and we teach these 12 steps. And we go out, and I just had two girls that got a year. They've walked through the 12 steps with me that I have now basically said, you can sponsor. And what was wild was, right after I told the one girl that, you know, you can sponsor, because I've been watching her guide other younger women all along. She just didn't know that's what she was doing. The day I told her that she could sponsor, that afternoon she got a phone call from a girl she had given her phone number to asking if she would sponsor her. And she says, she calls me up and she goes, I told her I'd have to call you first. And I said, you can sponsor, you're allowed. And she goes, but I don't know what to do. And I said, well, that's what you got me for. I said, I'm going to walk you through it. So I said, give the girl my number too, just in case she can't reach you, she can call me. It's okay. And I've been walking her through it, but she knows what to do. She really does. She knows what to do, because what she's doing is telling her exactly what I told her. And you know what I told her? I told her what my sponsor told me. And I'm pretty sure that what my sponsor told me is what her sponsor told her. And I'm quite sure if we looked at it, we could go all the way back to Bill and Bob. Because that's what we do. We pass it down. And I'm pretty sure that if we look around, if we go down a few generations, you know, look back in a few years, those people are going to be telling their sponsees the same thing that I told them. Because that's the way it works. That's the way this program works. We educate each other on down the line. We all know how I feel about promises. There are 10 promises for step 12. And the promise, my favorite promise, is when we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands are better than anything we could have planned. And that is on page 100. I learned very quickly that every time I let God have the plan and I took my fingers out of it, that things worked out way better than anything I could have engineered. And I have to tell this story. When I was getting the settlement from my lawsuit, I had told my attorney, I'm going to buy a house. That's what I'm going to use that settlement for. I'm going to set myself up in a house. And because I was on Social Security disability, he says, you get that disability, because of your disability, you get that money, you have to like get rid of it. Like, you got so much time to do it. You got to do it right away. Well, my friend Terry and her boyfriend had been looking for a house, and Terry to get me out of the house because I couldn't drive for like 2 years. I had no feeling in my legs anymore. And so Terry would call me up and she'd say, I'm going to go look at houses. You want to go with me? And I said, yeah, I need to get out of the house. I need to get out of here. So we'd drive around and she and I drove past this one little house. And Terry says, I said, oh my God, that's the cutest little house. It's like a two-bedroom house, and it's really, really cute. Just a little thing. It sits on a half an acre. Just cutest little house you've ever seen. Terry says, oh, it's too small for Jack and I. And she crosses it off their list. I said, oh, house would be just perfect for me. The house went off the market. And I was kind of disappointed because, you know, I knew that I was going to be coming up on getting that money, and I knew that house was right in my price range and everything. The house went off the market. I thought, oh, it's sold. Well, my attorney calls me up and he says, you're going to have that money within about 2 weeks. He says, you need to start looking for your house. So I waited till the paper came out with the house to home section in it, and I opened it up to look at the section for the home, the open house things. And that house was in there for going in for that Sunday. It was going to be an open house. So I called Terry up and I said, that house is back on the market and they got an open house this Sunday. And she says, I'll go with you. So we went to two other places. We went to that one and I walked in, and literally when I walked in that house, it felt like I could breathe in that house. And it was perfect. It's got a nice little tiny kitchen, a little dining room, it's got two small bedrooms, a nice sized living room, and just a perfect little house. Went and saw a few more places because I wanted to make sure I was looking for the right one. I prayed and meditated for 24 hours, called my realtor and said, I want that house, and here's my bid. I get the check. They finally accepted my bid. We went back and forth a little bit. They finally accepted. We closed on that house on my sister's birthday. And I've been living in that little house ever since. It was like God took that house off the market because it needed some work. And they had to do the work before it would sell. They had had it on the market for 2 years and it hadn't sold, so they took it off the market to do some work on it. They put it back on the market at a lower price. 2 weeks before I was going to be ready to buy it. They had no other offers but mine. It was like God set that up for me to be able to buy that house. My neighbors are awesome. Okay? They take my trash cans out to the road for me. They bring my trash cans in from the road for me. I have one neighbor that comes over and does yard lawn cleanup for me and gathers up all the leaves and gets rid of them for me. I bake them cookies and make them soup. But they help me out tremendously. They're wonderful people. And God set it up for me to be in that house, in that neighborhood. I know He did. It's the most perfect place on the face of the earth for me to be. And God set it up. It was one of my other little... And that was when I turned around and looked later and went, okay, God, thanks for doing that for me. You know, and I just have to rely. That's called relying on God. And I have that reliance on God today. I don't need to have... I don't have to rely on self anymore. I don't rely on myself for... You know, fear of financial security, I don't worry about that. My needs are met. My bills are paid. I mean, my car's a little bit old, but you know what? I've owned it for 9 years now, and so far I still haven't put $3,000 into it. She runs like a champ. She may be old, but she drives like a dream. And I realize one of these days she'll probably sit me on the side of the road, but you know what? I'll get another one. Because God will take care of me on that. I know He will. I just don't have any... I don't have the worries anymore. I don't have to run everything. I don't have to micromanage everything anymore. I'm well taken care of. I just know that I don't have those worries anymore. You know, the last year and a half, I had a lot of panic and anxiety due to the pandemic. And it was fear over having to have people contact. To me, that was something I couldn't manage, and I fell out of contact with God for a few months. And He didn't go anywhere I did. I lost that contact because it felt like I had been deserted. But I didn't. I deserted God more than the other way around, and I know that. I was afraid for my children and my grandchildren, and I was afraid for myself, and I so bad just wanted to close up my house and just hide inside and never go anywhere again. I couldn't get behind the wheel of my car and drive because I was so afraid I was going to be in an accident. And it took me a while to come out of that. And I'm through the other side now. I'm on the other side of all of that now. And I look back and I think I made it through. I made it through. Thank God I made it through. Because I know quite a few people went through what I went through, and some of them are still not out the other side of that. I'm in a support group for people who had COVID and were left with a lot of residual effects, and a lot of them are still hiding out in their homes. They still can't get out. But I'm going to say, I think the biggest thing that has helped me is that I have a community in fellowship that has helped me get out. A lot of these people don't have a fellowship like we have. And I think that is the biggest thing that has helped me break out of being stuck in my house. Being able to talk to people in the fellowship and go to meetings has been the best thing that happened to me. I had an incentive to come out of my house. And trust me, it was tough. The first time I went to a meeting, getting out of the door and driving down to a meeting, it was tough. It was hard. I made the vow to start coming over to this meeting because that drive was good for me. It was good for me to make that drive across town. It was a challenge to myself. Going to the club was a challenge to myself. Going to my home group was a challenge to myself. But you know, now I'm doing it and it feels normal. It feels normal again. And I prayed the whole time I did it, like, God, you got to walk through this with me. And you know what? He did. He did. But I'm really grateful that I have the 12 steps. I'm really grateful that I have the fellowship. I'm really grateful that I have a God of my understanding today to help me through everything that I go through. And that I get to practice these principles in all my affairs. Not just the AA things, in all my affairs. My medical affairs, my work affairs, my family affairs. I get to work the 12 steps in all of those. And I've really had a great pleasure in doing this, and I really don't have anything else to add tonight. So thank you.
Now is it on? Now it's on. Thank you, Susan. So at this time, we have the opportunity for people to ask questions of our speaker. So anybody here in the room or on Zoom that has a question, if you're on Zoom, go ahead and unmute yourself at any point and just go ahead.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks, Susan. It's been a joy to be here and listen to your message from your 12 steps. They're not yours, but it's how you work them, and it's been very enlightening. The question I have about step 12 is the principles. Are those AA principles that you spoke of?
Yes.
That you read off?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Because you said there's all kinds of principles you could find around them. Is that what you had led to say we can...
What I did was I Googled principles of the 12 steps of AA, and there's different... they come up with different lists of principles associated with the 12 steps of AA, and I picked the one that was closest to what I believe they are.
Okay, that's all. I was just wondering. Thank you.
Hi, Jim Alcoholic.
Hi, Jim.
Thanks, Susan. Another great night of AA. And you know, the step says having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. And you talked about spiritual awakenings, and you talked about spiritual experiences. Same?
Yes, I believe so.
Easy enough. Thanks.
I really enjoyed listening to you. You remind me of Judge Judy, you know, and Dr. Phil, because I love your straightforwardness, you know, and you challenge people, like, directly, like, catch them off guard. I like that. I do that. I'm not sure people like it, but... So I'm going to ask you, over the years, you've had a lot of time in the program. Have you gone back and heard yourself do, like, the 12 steps or leads of yourself?
I've heard my lead.
Yeah, and I'm asking you that because have you noticed or heard your presentations and thought, what the hell was I saying back then?
I've heard my lead, like one from like the early years, like maybe about 5 years sober, and then one about maybe when I was like in the my 30s, I did one, I heard. That's about it. There's just those two. And both times I was like, I agreed with myself, you know, kind of. It's like, that's what I wanted to say. See, I don't remember, like, when I'm going to have to listen to myself on this because I don't remember what I say. Because once I start, it's God. I let God take over and me say whatever comes out. I mean, I have notes here.
And so today, you walk the program that you talk about. That's very obvious. But do you find yourself, I really did a mess up today due to my behavior. You find that you still do those things? Well, thank God.
Sure. Of course. I am not perfect. Progress, not perfection. That is my favorite saying.
Who else has a question for Susan? Anyone on Zoom? Oh, Jack has a question.
Hi, Susan. Thanks.
Hi, Jack.
Again. Great job. So I wonder, what are some of the things that you do with the girls that you work with in terms of trying to encourage them to take on service commitments and things like that?
A lot of times, to get them started, I voluntold them. I encourage them, like, my favorite trick is, like, we'll be somewhere and they'll say, we need somebody to do such and such, and I'll just go, and then they'll raise their hand, or I'll just look at them, kick them, and I'll say, opportunity, or I'll tap on the table and go, I hear opportunity knocking. I'm not subtle. But I will voluntold them, you know, they need help at such and such, you're free that day, I think you should be there. You know, I did that for, like, old-timers, and I do it for various things. So they're having a function at the club, they need people to come and help serve, be there. I do it to them all the time, because they don't know, they're afraid to get involved. I'm not going to know anybody. I don't know what to do. Who's going to tell me what to do? Oh, I'll make sure somebody tells you what to do. I will tell you what to do. I'm very straightforward with my girls, though. But voluntold is my favorite.
Who else has a question? Zoom? Anyone on Zoom?
Even Helen doesn't have something.
Last call. If that's it, Susan.
All right.
Oh, wait.
No.
Wait, Kevin's waving his arm.
Oh, Kevin.
I was waiting for Kevin to put his hand up, and I didn't know what was happening.
You're not getting out this early. Let me check the time and see if one. Oh, I got a lot of questions.
Okay.
What step were we on tonight?
12.
12. Well, okay. So, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, did you notice that you were having spiritual experiences and enlightenments before you reached step 12?
Yes.
What do you tell the girls when they say, I haven't had one? When am I going to get one?
They just don't know what they've seen.
So do you kind of walk them through, like, you gave a couple examples of just, like, simple things that, you know, that you considered a spiritual experience or a spiritual awakening. Do you share that with them and tell them to, you know, look out for those kind of opportunities?
No, I ask them to start describing good things that happened in their day. Okay, and then when they start describing things, I'll say, do you think that was God or do you think that was odd? And they'll go, well, it must have been God, because, you know, and they'll say, oh, that must have been a spiritual experience. And I'll be like, yes! You know, because there are things, they just don't see it. And so I try and point it out, but I let them try and discover it themselves.
Oh, that's great.
And they know I don't believe in odd, so they know that they better say it's God. So
that's true. And, you know, when you tie these all together, after somebody has done all 12 steps with you and you set them out and let them sponsor, do you go back with them over the steps again? In other words, like, you know, if you went through them when you were like 3, 4, 5, 6 months sober, and then, you know, and then you have 2, 3, 4, 5 years of experience. Do you go back through that?
When they start getting jammed up about stuff, what I will do is I'll say, you know, look, maybe it's time we go back and look at this step. Because you're jammed up about this. I think we need to go back and look at this step again. About this, what's going on here. And they're ready to do it because now they know that it works. So they're ready to take that, they'll go back and look at that step. A lot of times it's relationships with their family, like moms, dads, baby daddies, you know, they're ready to go back and they're ready to say, okay, I need to work the steps on this. They're having trouble holding down a job and they've gotten a job and lost it and gotten a job and lost it. Well, maybe we need to look at the steps to see what behaviors and characteristics that you have that are causing you to do this stuff, you know, and we go back and we look at the steps and all of a sudden they realize their character defects are causing them to lose the jobs. So I will take the girls back down in the steps. We do 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 again.
Does anybody ask you when they're done, and they say, you know, I'd like to go a little bit deeper into these steps? How do you treat that when somebody approaches you and says, you know, I did a first step, I realize that I'm powerless and my life is unmanageable, but, you know, I'd like to go a little deeper into that step?
I'm all ready for it. I'm all set. Anytime anybody wants to go deeper on anything, I'm ready for it. No problem. I will go, you know, I say it all the time, you know, I will work as hard for your sobriety as you do. I'm not going to work harder for your sobriety than you. But if you want to work really hard, I will work right there with you. But I'm not going to work harder than you. So you come to me and you say, look, I need to do more work in this area. I want to go deeper. I'm right there with you.
And you talked about the principles, you know, it's been my experience also that a lot of people don't know what the principles of, you know, practice these principles and all our affairs. When somebody's doing, like, say, their 10th step, and it kind of relates to when they're not being successful with a particular principle, but also that would be part one of that question. And then part two of it would be when you notice that somebody has picked up on a principle and it seems to be there a strong point in them, what do you encourage them to do with their strengths as much as you do with their weaknesses?
I'm not quite sure I understand exactly what you're asking here.
So, like, the first part is, like, say somebody's having trouble with honesty, okay? And it's kind of apparent and you... or gossiping or something like that, and you deal with that. And when you notice that somebody is being, you know, same thing, has transformed from being, you know, full disclosure that they don't mostly true, 80% maybe, 90%. 40, stuff like that. And then all of a sudden, you see that flip, that coin flip, to where it's like, oh, you know, you've really gotten this and taken this and actually run with the asset as much as you do with the defect. I guess that's...
Well, I praise when they're doing well. I always praise. I'm the first one to tell them they're doing wrong, but I'm also the first one to tell them when they're doing right. And my girls know that. If I find that they're slipping on a character defect, I don't ever do it in front of people. I will not haul my girls down in front of people. I always do it in private. But I praise them when they're doing right. I'm the first one to tell them they're doing right. I'm the first one to tell them when they're doing wrong. If they're still slipping on a character defect, and it's one that we have discussed, and, you know, they'll come to me and they'll say, I just don't understand why things are getting better. Well, we talked about this character defect of yours about gossiping, and I see you're still doing it all the time, and you wonder why you're not getting any better. Do you think that maybe you need to take a look at that again? And they'll say, well, I didn't realize I was doing it. Well, you need to be on top of that, don't you? So, you know, but if I see that they're not gossiping any longer and that things are getting better, I'm the first one to say, hey, you know, you've really done well with that. I'm really proud of you for doing that.
Okay.
But I'm the first one to tell them when they're doing right.
So, like, when an example of, like, a positive thing, like, you kind of voluntold someone that, well, maybe you should get involved in central service or at the club, and you see that, my God, it hits one of their niches, and how do you approach, like, encouraging them to pursue that particular talent of theirs, and I'll say exploit, but that's probably not a real good word.
Well, if they're really good at something, I encourage them to continue to do it.
Or expand it in other areas, I guess. Like we say, in the 12 step, we say, practice these principles in all our affairs. But, you know, you want to be... You're a good coffee maker, and then an opportunity comes up and they want to open up a coffee shop or something.
Well, then you would encourage that.
Yeah.
Right. I encourage their assets. I mean, I have girls that have shown prospects of being good at certain things that I have then encouraged them to turn that into a possible job-making opportunity.
I know you want to fill up the time.
Oh, you know it.
It's you dropping the
computer. Susan, in all your years of sponsoring people and listening to people like, what do I do about this? What do I do about this circumstance or whatever? I know there's a fine line between advice and... Have you ever had somebody approach you about something and you said, you know what? I don't know what you should do. Has that ever happened to you?
What I do is I say, I've never had that situation, but I know of someone who's been in that situation. I can call them and find out what they did, and I'll get back to you. Because if I haven't been through it, I probably know somebody who has. And I'm not afraid to call my sponsor and ask her what she knows. And if I don't know somebody, my sponsor probably does. Okay, and I'll keep looking until I find someone who has been through it.
I'm Amy, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Amy.
Hi. I have a few friends that, you know, kind of get through a little rough patch, and then they say, well, you know, I'm just busy living my best life. I don't have time for meetings. I still call my sponsor and do the steps. And for me, I know meetings are, you know, it's not a cafeteria-style program. I can't just pick. So at what point, you know, like, what do you tell your women that maybe are just like, oh, I don't need meetings anymore? Or, you know, at what point do you kind of say, well, then maybe I'm not the right sponsor for you? Like, what's kind of like the cutting line there?
If you're the sponsor, you can say that they need to hit a certain number of meetings a week in order for you to stay their sponsor. As you well know, I tell my girls that they have to hit at least 2 meetings a week. When they're over a year and they're under a year, they have to hit at least 4 a week. And you know I tell them that, and then when they stop doing that, I suggest that maybe they need to find somebody else to sponsor them. As you well know, my dear.
Hi, Susan.
Hi, Colleen.
What do you do when you sponsor someone and they decide not to be a part of the program? Do you reach out to them at all? Do you chase them? What do you do when you know that they're not going to come back, but you know that they should be in the program?
I don't chase them. I just recently had someone that I was working with that made the decision based on advice she was given by someone who doesn't go to meetings anymore, that you can do this without the meetings, who decided not to do meetings any longer. I gave her a phone call of, I really hope that you are doing okay with all of this. I really wish I would see you at meetings. You have my phone number if you need me. You know how to call, get a hold of me. And I left it at that. I'm not going to chase her. I can't. That ruins an opportunity for a later time. She's doing what she thinks is the right thing for her. And if I would keep calling her, it would just make her resentful. So, no, I don't chase. But I give him a nice, pleasant little call that says, I'm still available. You have my number if you ever needed me. And that leaves it wide open for a later date.
All right, Susan, I think that wraps it up.
Okay.
Thank you so much. We have a couple items here for you. We have a certificate, first of all, from the group.
Awesome.
Expressing our appreciation. And we held off until you were done tonight, but we think that you've earned this. It's a nice little coin to commemorate your efforts on our behalf.
Thank you.
So we appreciate it.
Okay. Do we have any announcements from membership?
New Hope Group, which is a Sunday night meeting that have been meeting at St. Stephen's Church, is relocating to the Fairview United Methodist Church on Abonia Road, which is south of Route 20, across the street from the Presbyterian Church. That starts on January 12th. 7 o'clock live speaker meeting.
September 12th.
So what did I say?
January.
So the New Hope Group is relocating to the Fairview United Methodist Church. What time did you say that was at?
7 o'clock Sunday night, September 12th.
Okay, 7 o'clock Sunday night, September 12th is the date that becomes effective. Any other announcements? Oh, we have cherry tree cake.